The Hard Shoulder on News Talk
with Nissan. Let's go the distance by keeping our distance. Nissan. Innovation that excites.
The Justice Minister says that she will consider a recommendation to not name people suspected of committing a sex crime unless they are convicted. Currently, someone accused of rape has anonymity at trial. Now, a review ordered following the Belfast rape case has recommended that anyone suspected of any kind of sex offence should not have their name published unless and until they are convicted. It has also recommended that barristers will have to request permission from a judge to question the victim about their sexual history. Joining me now on the line is Nolene Blackwell, Chief Executive of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. Nolene, thank you for joining us here on News Talk. Now, this report has been a long time in the coming, and indeed you and your organisation did contribute to it. Are you happy with the final report? Because sometimes these have many cooks, many authors, and not everyone gets exactly what they wanted.
Yeah, so while we didn't get exactly what we wanted, Mark, we have to say it's an excellent report. It definitely has the hand of one author on it, Tom O'Malley, who teaches law in NUI Galway and is a barrister himself, is also the country's leading authority academically in relation to sexual offences. And he has been extremely careful in that. We have probably complained a lot about the length of time the whole thing has taken. But now that it has come out, there are some really important good recommendations there that match quite closely what we said, because we prepared something based on the experience of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre dealing with a whole lot of people. And then we asked a number of survivors to check it out, to check where we're right. And again, what has come out is very empathetic to victims, not necessarily sympathetic, but recognises how poorly victims have featured in the criminal justice system in sexual offences trials, even though these are trials that affect them totally intimately. So there's some really good recommendations there, which, Mark, of course, if they're implemented, will be great. But it's a question of, at least we're starting with good recommendations, and then we also have a promise of an implementation plan.
Okay, well, we'll get to the positives. What didn't you get?
So I suppose in terms of legal advice for victims would be one of the areas where we wanted more. I'm a bit philosophical about it. We were coming from quite a radical perspective. Right now, everybody in the courtroom is represented except the victim. The victim can get very limited representation. Tom O'Malley represents more access to legal advice, maybe a little more representation. But to our mind, there is still a huge imbalance in sexual offence trials, which are very often just about two people with different accounts of the same events. And if the jury believes one, they will believe the encounter was consensual, and therefore there's no crime. If they believe the other, they will say it is non-consensual. But the way in which each side can present their case is totally different, because one has a team of lawyers and the other, who's the victim, has nobody at all.
Nolene,
so we would have looked for full representation.
Yeah, Nolene, can you explain something to me? In a rape case, for example, there will be a defendant, somebody who is accused. They have a legal team. In defending that case and rebutting the accusations, part of that will be to impugn the integrity of the victim. Now, if you impugn the integrity of anybody in any other sphere of life, you are automatically entitled to legal recourse. So in that scenario, why were the victims never allowed to have legal representation in the first place?
Because I think of the way in which victims in these kind of cases, Mark, were treated like victims in any other kind of a case. So, for instance, if your car was stolen, for the sake of argument, and you went into court, all the prosecution wants you to do is go in and talk about your car, what kind of a car it was, where you left it, and where it wasn't when you went looking for it again. And in some ways, it is quite cut and dried. The difference with sexual offences, and why we wanted it recognised that they were different, is that whether it is an offence or not depends on whether the behaviour was consensual or not. We would say that when you have a situation where, literally exactly as you said, the job of the defence is to try and discredit the complainant, the case that they're making. But the complainant has very little control over what the other side asks. So we're not there yet, Mark. If I had to put a bet on, in 10 years' time, I think we will have built up the recognition of the victims' rights in this. But for the moment, there's another recommendation that will be very useful, and that is that Tom O'Malley highly recommends and strongly recommends training for all the professionals involved in a case in a couple of ways. First of all, training in what are often called rape myths. So the question that you can contribute to your own misfortune by dressing in the wrong way or by going to the wrong place or that kind of thing. And because lawyers come from society, they carry the kind of misconceptions and biases. And the other training that that O'Malley recommends in this for all lawyers, including judges, is the impact of trauma. Recognition that a sexual offence is highly traumatic for a victim, and that that trauma can result in different types of behaviour. So lawyers traditionally tend to look for physical evidence. Where's the bandage? Where's the evidence? You know, where's this is something that impacts on the psyche. So O'Malley is saying lawyers have to have this training. In fact, he goes so far as to say if the state is employing a lawyer for a prosecution or for the Legal Aid Board or the rest of it, they should have a certificate to say they've completed this type of training. That will help. And in due course, I'm pretty sure victims' rights will begin to be established more. But traditionally, the bar don't like it, the bar council don't like it, judges don't like it. It messes up the thing. It makes it a triangular process in court rather than the tennis court they have now between the prosecution and the defence. But, you know, we'll keep pushing away at that one.
One of the other things that he recommended was that barristers will have to request permission from a judge to question a victim about their sexual history. And, we have repeatedly over the years seen victims being asked highly inappropriate, pejorative type questioning that makes them look bad. Not necessarily that they were asking for it, but that there was a history here that, you know, allowed this to happen. And, I mean, in some cases, you know, their dress was being given as a, you know, as an excuse or a reason or why this might have happened. And their underwear question. I mean, stuff. No woman in a rape trial, a victim, should ever be asked about her underwear. Is that going to be allowed or not allowed in the future?
Yeah, well, I think that caused such a scandal 2 years ago. But it did show what people think in broader society. And that, I think, goes back to training and awareness raising again about the fact that that was highly inappropriate. Now, there will be some cases, just to be totally fair about this, there will be some cases where a person's sexual history may be relevant. Like, for instance, if they're in a long-term relationship with somebody and they had consensual sex with them on a number of occasions, and on this occasion they're saying the sex was not consensual, but their partner didn't know that. So there may be occasions. So the law must allow for some permission to question a complainant on their sexual history. But the trouble, what happens right now is I can be a victim going up to a court case, and I can go into court expecting my case to go on. And at the last moment, the defence can spring on me that they want to question me on my sexual history, which is highly intimidating for a victim. So O'Malley is recommending that kind of an application, or an application to see documents, such as counselling notes. For instance, some people would come to our centre for counselling. There is, the defence may have a right to see counselling notes, but they'll have to ask all of these questions well in advance in a pre-trial hearing, in a preliminary hearing. I suppose just part of the horror for people going into the justice process as victims is the delay, the length of time it can take, the fact that you can be steeling yourself to give evidence about something so intimate that you might not be prepared to tell another person in the world about it. And now you have to tell a room full of strangers. You've fixed yourself up, you're getting ready to do all of that, and then somebody says, oh, and by the way, I want to make an application on sexual history and extra documentation, etc. So O'Malley is saying, don't run the case that way. Have the case so that all of these things are decided well in advance for the most part. And that's actually just an efficiency thing. Our courts are becoming slightly more, they're becoming more efficient as time goes by. And to be honest, that's really a management thing rather than anything else, and should have been in place years ago. If you were a big business case, if it was a case about big business, those kind of things are always dealt with in preliminary hearings.
Okay, this report, will this bring us up to, I suppose, what international best practice is? Because there is some confusion. We saw that with the Belfast rape trial a year and a half ago. Neighbouring jurisdictions may not overlap legally, but the papers in the news can publish things, different things. So will this clear up that grey area or prevent that kind of thing happening again?
So I think it is probably true to say that there are a lot of things that we don't want to copy from elsewhere. So in some ways, this is not the most radical report we've ever seen. It is not going, the world is not going to be turned upside down by it. But what it will do is it will recognise that the victim in a sexual offensive trial has taken quite a courageous step to come forward. Very few of them do in the first place. And this is to recognise and respect the victim in the process. I heard Helen McEntee this morning using that word again about the need for respect of the victim in the trial. When you think about it, Mark, less than 1 in 10 people will report a sexual offence, and even less than that will ever go to trial, partly because it's such a horrendous process. This will take some of the grief out of the process, and hopefully for us, it will make it a bit easier for a victim to come forward and make their report and be treated respectfully through the process. And if we have more people reporting, then we will have less, then it will be less easy for people to commit these crimes in the first place, and that will make us all safer.
Okay, well, as you said at the start, you didn't get everything you wanted, but you got an awful lot of it, and it is a report that you are happy with, even though it took a long time to get it.
Absolutely right. And I suppose we are happy with the report. We see it as really important, provided it doesn't go onto a shelf, provided that the minister's commitment to the implementation plan within 10 weeks and the programme for government implementation to implement all of the recommendations of the O'Malley report, provided those go ahead, then we'll be happy. But it is a really good start.
Nolene Blackwell, Chief Executive of the Dublin Rape Crisis, thank you so much for joining us here on News Talk. Right, if you have been impacted by any of this conversation, you can call the National 24-Hour Helpline on 1-800-77-88-88. That's 1-800-77-88-88.